Welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon. Today we continue our inspiration article. I have back in the studio with me two panelists. Welcome back, Zach and Joe.
Good to be back.
Great to be here.
Joe, what is something that we learned about yesterday?
Well, we learned about the fact that, you know, even now there are still issues that are occurring in South Sudan, and so we learned that, you know, even now South Sudan continues to uproot people, continues to displace people, and, you know, continues to create refugees.
That's right. We learned yesterday about a man. His name is Jacob Ayuan, and he's 39 years old. He is now a psychiatric physician assistant in the United States, but he didn't start off there. He was not born in the United States. He's actually from Africa, and we started the journey yesterday that he had to go on, right?
That's right. We started in Sudan, and we learned, South Sudan, rather, and we learned that he was uprooted and started this journey. And this word we learned yesterday, to be uprooted, just means to remove a person from their home. And here, this is the case for Jacob. He was removed from his home because of a war that had broken out, and he quickly had to leave the camp that he was working. And now he's on this very difficult life journey.
He is. And Joe, I think, already mentioned that the fighting continues. We have a sidebar there at the bottom of page 18. Joe, could you just read that for us?
So it says, fighting continues. The 20-year-old civil war in Sudan ended in 2005, but peace didn't last long. After South Sudan gained independence in 2011, a civil war erupted in 2013. A 2015 peace agreement dissolved in 2016, and fighting, mostly along ethnic lines, has continued.
So we see here that there have been times of peace, but we also see that the fighting continues. And, you know, peace didn't last long, it says. So South Sudan gained independence in 2011, as I mentioned yesterday, but civil war has erupted once again. What is a peace agreement, though? You know, you have a war and you have these peace agreements. What's a peace agreement?
Well, more or less, you'll have times in war where people, the two people that are fighting will kind of come to terms and make negotiations and kind of agree, maybe often it's called a ceasefire, where we will not, you know, fire at each other. And basically for a time there is a pause in the fighting.
All right, and so that's what happened in 2015, or actually the peace agreement dissolved in 2016. So they had the peace agreement for, I guess, maybe a few months or a year, and then the fighting continues mostly along those ethnic lines. And so that's where we are. And we have learned, though, about Jacob's story and the journey that he has been on. And we also see, we saw yesterday, that he is helping others, other refugees in the United States. He's sharing his story to help them grapple with the things that they have been through, and that is definitely commendable, and he's using what he has gone through to help others. Today we continue on the journey. We're on page 19, and we'll have our first reading for today.
Making their way to Ethiopia. After 3 months and 1,000 miles from the cattle camp he had fled, Ayuan and the other boys crossed the border to Ethiopia. No one greeted them. There were no buildings, no homes, no running water. The boys divided into groups of about a dozen. Ayuan helped build houses, chopping trees and cutting grass with machetes for thatched roofs. By 1991, the Ethiopian camp had become a refugee haven. The United Nations had built a school, and Ayuan was in third grade. But normalcy did not last. Ethiopia was at war, and the inhabitants of the camp were in danger. 4 years after he had fled Sudan, he had to go back through the strife-ridden country to reach the border with Kenya.
All right, so yesterday we started this journey that Jacob went on, and today we're continuing it. It says after 3 months and 1,000 miles from the cattle camp he had fled, Jacob and the other boys crossed the border to Ethiopia. And we have a map there. We see that Kenya and Ethiopia, Sudan and South Sudan, they're right there together. And so that's where we are. When they crossed the border, was there anyone there to greet them?
No. In fact, it says there were no buildings, no homes, no running water. And you are kind of given this description of you know, how the journey is continuing on for them. And it's, you know, it's hard. It remains hard. And so they said, okay, well, there are no homes, there's no buildings, so we need to do something about this. And so they made this decision that they would divide into groups of about 12 people, and they would start, and so Jacob started helping building houses.
All right, he was building houses, he was chopping trees, he was cutting grass, and they have a tool here that they were using.
Yes, they have an interesting tool, it's called a machete. And a machete is just sort of a large, heavy knife. It usually has a very wide blade. And it's good for, you just kind of cut something down. Mm. It's usually pretty easy to cut with a machete.
All right. And they were putting together roofs. And they're described as thatched roofs, Zach.
Right. So we get this adjective here, thatched, just being referring to the straw or kind of these reeds. And they are used to make these roofs over these homes.
Mm.
And I just wanted to point out, too, that, you know, Joe mentioned machete and that these tools are often associated just kind of, it has deep roots, I think, for the people that use them in these countries.
Yeah.
It's kind of this extension and just a very reliable tool in order to kind of make a living.
All right. And so that's what they were using there. And these kids were building and chopping down trees, doing a lot of work that most of us would not be doing at that age.
Did you guys ever build your own house?
I don't have that kind of experience.
I've done construction work, but I can't say that I've built my own house.
That being said, there is a great YouTube series. If you look up, like, Man with a Machete, and it's a sort of quick version of, he goes out into the woods with nothing but a machete and, like, builds a house.
Wow.
Really? It's an amazing thing to watch, and it does, like, time lapse. So maybe it took him the entire day, but you can watch the video in maybe 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're interested in seeing what this looks like, you know, go onto YouTube and you can actually see someone start to finish build a house.
Where is he doing this?
I think he was doing it in, like, a woods somewhere.
Okay.
I can't remember where.
Okay. In the United States?
I think maybe in the United States. He's just out in the middle of nowhere. And he even got to the point where he had, like, a fireplace.
Wow.
And, like, a little chimney. It's impressive.
Some people, they have skills that I just don't have.
Well, and for Jacob, I think these life experiences really, wow, they go a long way. You can just say, well, you know, I built my own house. You know, you do what you have to in order to survive.
Again, I'm sure that builds into his character and his perseverance for where he is at now. Well, by 1991, the Ethiopian camp had become a refugee haven. What is a haven, Joe?
A haven is just sort of a safe place for people to go to where they can escape danger.
And the United Nations came in and they actually built a school, and Jacob was in third grade, and so it's great that they could get an education as they were there at this refugee camp in Ethiopia. But things changed, Zach.
That's right. It says that normalcy did not last. Normalcy just being kind of that state of, you know, feeling like we have a sustainable, normal life here. So you have Jacob going to school, and there's the support of the UN. But again, war breaks out in Ethiopia, and it says that the inhabitants of the camp were now, again, in danger.
That's right.
And so this word inhabitants is just those occupying this camp.
All right. Well, 4 years after he had fled Sudan, he had to flee again. He had not flee Sudan. This time he had to flee the Ethiopian refugee camp. He had to go through the struggle again, Joe. And how do they describe, you know, the country there?
Well, so they describe, you know, so 4 years after he had fled Sudan, you know, he had to go back through to a strife-ridden country to reach the border with Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
That's strife-ridden. And so ridden here, it's just filled, and it's filled with something unpleasant, and the thing it's filled with is strife.
So he had to go back through Sudan. As you look at the map there, Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Kenya. So he had to go back through South Sudan to get to Kenya, and there was still war going on.
I'm sure some pretty unpleasant memories, too, kind of returning, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Right. And something that can be difficult maybe for readers is to think of, so here it says he had fled Sudan, and then he had to go back through Sudan, because South Sudan doesn't exist yet. Mm-hmm. In this point of his story, it's still Southern Sudan. Yeah. And this is often, I feel like, what makes following African politics and international issues difficult. Mm. Country names change very often.
Right.
Borders change. It's a little difficult to know.
Very volatile.
Right. What's going on? It's very volatile.
All right. Well, we have more to learn about this trip to Kenya. Let's find out about it in our next reading.
It was the same unforgiving trip. The boys continued on foot to Pachala, a small town in southern Sudan, where they huddled for 2 months. But as the civil war raged closer, they moved to another town near the Kenyan border. Within hours, they had to run. A day later, they stopped to rest, Ayuan recalls. There was nothing there. No houses, buildings, running water, just like the wild forest. They walked farther to another town, and a rescue convoy came 3 weeks later. Ayuan hopped into the back of a cattle truck packed with refugees going to Kakuma.
So they had already done this trip. They've gone so many miles, and they get to safety in Ethiopia, and now there's war in Ethiopia, and now they have to flee. And we see here, as they flee Ethiopia on their way to Kenya, it was the same unforgiving trip. Now, what do we mean when we say this? You know, we're using the word forgiveness here. What are we talking about, Zach?
Well, it's again start and stop, and so it's more of the same. And it says that it was the same unforgiving trip, just referring to the kind of the experience they had, that it's almost unrelenting, that the problems just continued on. They
it's
didn't
not gracious at all, right?
There's no grace along the way. It's one problem after another.
That is a really hard thing to imagine, to go through it once and then to have to go through it again. So the boys continued on foot. They went to the small town in southern Sudan where they huddled for 2 months. Now, when I hear the word huddle, I think of American football. What does it mean to huddle?
So when they say huddle here, it is, of course, like Brandon mentioned, different from American football, where you see big players mm-hmm. get in a circle mm-hmm. and their arms around each other. Here, huddle together means to be very close together, maybe for safety or for warmth.
Yeah, so they were there for a couple of months, and then civil war raged closer.
Right. And just a comment on this word huddled, you know, maybe, you know, we would say close, right? And that's exactly right. But if you were to ask Jacob, maybe he would say we were cramped together.
Mm.
I often think, you know, as you're traveling, you know, I don't know, sometimes space is an issue, or just the ability to kind of like have privacy, you know, whatever the case may be. But here it's like we're huddled together. There's not a lot of privacy. We are cramped tightly together. So it's a tough thing.
And I'm sure they need to be close together for security, right?
Right.
They need to be all together to make sure that everyone is as safe as possible. We see next that the civil war raged closer. You can imagine that a war would be raging, right?
Right. In this rage, we use for both war as well as fires. You know, we talk about fires raging across the woods.
Extreme.
It's extreme, yes. And it gives that sense that there's a lot of violence.
Well, as this war raged closer, they moved to another town near the Kenyan border. Remember, they're on their way to Kenya, hoping to reach safety there. And it says, within hours, they had to run. So, my goodness, imagine you're walking all this time, and now you have to run because you have to hurry up. You're trying to reach the Kenyan border. And then what happens, Zach, a day later?
Well, just the next day, they stopped to rest, but there was nothing there. they basically found themselves in kind of a wild forest without resources and without any amenities to kind of just feel, you know, like they were safe. Very vulnerable, I think.
Yeah, and it's hard to rest in those conditions as well. So they walked farther to another town, and finally a rescue convoy came. But this wasn't until 3 weeks later, Joe.
Right, so they had to wait a significant amount of time for this rescue convoy. Now, rescue, we know that rescue someone to save someone. And a convoy is just usually a team or a group of vehicles. And so here you can just imagine that you have a whole team of people in vehicles that are coming to help these victims.
So Jacob, he hopped into the back of one of those trucks, a cattle truck actually, with other refugees. We see here that it was packed with refugees, and so I'm sure that was not a comfortable journey, but it was better than walking on foot.
You know? Certainly, and you know, again, you have this kind of this very vivid image, and it's been 3 weeks, and you're just waiting, and you're not sure what's going to happen. Food supplies are low. You're all huddled together. There's probably disease, you know, within the camp, and just people hurting. You know, just that scene of this convoy of vehicles coming your way to come and rescue you. Wow, I'm sure that was he remembers that today.
Yeah, and we see the pain. It's very descriptive here, and it helps us to understand what these boys had to go through. Well, again, they are trying to reach the border of Kenya. They're trying to reach safety there. Let's find out how that happens in our next reading.
Life in Kenya. He entered fourth grade at a school at the Kakuma refugee camp that local Kenyans had built for the children. A good student, by the end of elementary school, he had earned high grades and was allowed to attend a high school outside of the refugee camp. In addition to his native Dinka and some Swahili, he spoke English. His studiousness would help him be selected as one of 4,000 lost boys to be resettled in the United States.
Well, they finally reached the Kenyan border, and we kind of just jump off into what happened with Jacob here. We see he entered fourth grade at school at the Kakuma refugee camp, and so they had a school there, there was education. And we learn more about Jacob and what he's like and what he was like in school.
Right. So at this Kakuma refugee camp, where refugees are finally able to have a safe place to be and get into school and get a sort of, we talked about normalcy before, have that sense of normalcy again. He was a very good student, and he was actually earning high grades.
Yes, he was. By the end of elementary school, he had earned high grades, and he was actually allowed then to attend high school outside of the refugee camp. So evidently there must have been some sort of benchmark for them to reach, and if you reach it, then you're able to go to this specific high school.
Well, and I'm sure for Jacob, there are personal benchmarks almost being kind of like broken, that are, they're surpassing, so to speak. I could imagine, you know, as an 8-year-old, well, I couldn't imagine, but I'm trying to think about for Jacob as an 8-year-old thinking, you know, am I going to make it through the day? Mm-hmm. Now he's finding himself able to travel again outside of this refugee camp in order to attend high school and to receive an education. And wow, just to see kind of through this journey and the perseverance that he's shown, there is hope now on the horizon for his life.
And I think it speaks to maybe how much he had impressed people around him. It's my understanding that in these sort of refugee camps, that you stay on site and everything happens inside of that camp.
Yeah.
So to be allowed to leave the camp and actually be inside Kenya, not just in the refugee space is just, you know, really amazing to see that he could kind of attract that kind of attention.
And to be able to perform well in the conditions that he was living in. You know, I mean, think about ourselves. We lived in very good conditions, and you know, sometimes we don't perform well in school and so forth. And so he could have given up, is what I'm trying to say, but he didn't.
No, he didn't. And I think you're right, Brandon. That's what came to my mind. And having spent time in some of the schools, as we teach, you know, it really does put, hey, guys, like a perspective. It puts things into perspective for all of us, you know, where it's like, oh, well, we complain about this or we complain about that. We want these resources. We don't want those. You know, I think to hear about someone who's just, they take what they get and they make the best of that really is a story of perseverance. And it's a good reminder for all of us.
Yeah, we complain about not having Wi-Fi or when the internet doesn't work exactly the way, as fast as we want and things like that. So this, as Zach said, puts life in perspective.
Right. And as you're talking about Wi-Fi, which is something I'll end up complaining about, yeah. Wi-Fi and my battery is too low.
Yes.
We often jokingly refer to these sort of things as first world problems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so if you're like, oh, my Wi-Fi isn't working, my life is over. And you say, ah, you know, that's a first world problem.
It makes us feel better about complaining about it, right?
Well, and we often say, well, you need to go walk, you know, in someone else's shoes. Mm-hmm. I suppose in this case, maybe without shoes.
Without shoes.
Understanding Jacob's journey.
Yeah, it's a really incredible journey that he went on. But we see here he persevered. He's a good student. And he even knows different languages.
Right. Something that's very interesting that it might be easy to forget is that within one country in Africa, you'll actually have several different languages. I was thinking about when I visited South Africa. South Africa has 11 national languages,
wow, really?
11 official languages.
Official?
Yes.
Wow.
And so they have to have those languages available to people, and it's mostly because you have so many different ethnic groups within one national border.
It's incredible.
Right. And so what's interesting is that many of them will be able to speak English to some degree, plus whatever is the dominant language in the area, plus whatever is their actual ethnic language.
Mm.
Wow. So lots of languages flying around there.
Yeah, but I mean, in this environment, he was, you know, still able to learn English, and, you know, there's three different languages that he's speaking there. And his studiousness, we normally use the adjective that someone is studious, but here we see the noun studiousness, not really an easy word to say. This would help him be selected as one of the 4,000 lost boys to be resettled in the U.S. And so, you know, there are different guidelines that the U.S. puts in place, and this helped him meet at least one of the guidelines.
Right. And this word that we're introduced to here, studiousness, is just referring to kind of his ability and his, I think, appreciation just to study. That, you know, it says that he was a good student. Oh, that's a good sign that you're studious, right, type of a learner.
Yeah. And a lot of, you know, people, students that I meet here in Asia are extremely studious, and they realize the importance of education, and that is emphasized a lot. And here, I don't know how much it was emphasized for him by teachers and so forth, or if he was more of a self-starter.
Good question. Yeah, it doesn't really say. You know, I would imagine, though, at some of these refugee camps, I mean, the fact that there's already this help that's been given, that there's going to be some guides or some teachers or just some leaders that are around that are going to champion that kind of an attitude and say, yeah, you know, hey, you're working hard. This is good, you know, and I think that's such an important factor in any classroom that you need teachers to reach out, or whether you're even just a parent. Child comes home from school and you kind of champion that attitude, or you just encourage them and you say, hey, like, this is a good way forward.
Right.
And something to keep in mind, one thing that's very encouraging is the fact that you can build a life almost from scratch, from nothing. So if you look on page 19 and you see that classroom, it's a dirt floor. Mm-hmm. These people are crammed together. Mm-hmm. And the idea that regardless of your situation, you have an opportunity to really build something and to really grow and develop if you want it.
That's a really good point, Joe, that it may take more determination, it may take more perseverance than most have to pull together, but it's still possible.
And here it says, you know, we're moving on in the story, in that he was one of the 4,000 lost boys to be resettled in the U.S., and I think this is a good kind of a contrast word, resettle. Mm-hmm. First, he was uprooted, and now he's going to be resettled. And I think there's this paints this picture of settling down, kind of coming into his own and able to, you know, get out of this war-ridden chapter of his life and start to settle into a profession.
And then there are other challenges, very different kinds of challenges, not as severe, but you know, when you move to a new country, you have to get used to the culture. And we're going to talk more about that tomorrow, the culture shock that he faced. But I know as I moved to a new area of the world, of course there was some culture shock. And, you know, we all have to face that. And so I'm sure all of these difficulties helped him deal with that problem as well. And so but he just keeps moving. He keeps persevering. He hasn't, you know, given up. And he has an encouraging story for us all to keep going. Well, we hope that you will check out our Topic Talks videos to learn more about this article. Of course, we have insights and we have features and an introduction and so forth. So you can learn more about this topic if you simply scan the QR code at the top of page 18. You can also go into our website, studioclassroom.com, to view the videos there. While you're there on our website, be sure to write into us or write into us at advance@studioclassroom.com. Let us know your thoughts. Maybe you have stories of perseverance. Maybe you have some thoughts about Jacob's story or how it has inspired you. We would like to hear your thoughts. Please go ahead and make time to write into us. And hey, maybe one of your comments may make it onto our feedback page in our magazine. Well, we thank you for joining us for day two of our inspiration article. We have more to discuss tomorrow as we end our article entitled Lost Boy of Sudan. So we hope you will join us again tomorrow. Until then, this is Brandon.
And Zach.
And Joe.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.